Welcome, dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd Printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 144 of Heroes Unlimited. We've finished up with the hardware character completely, including our little excursion into transdimensional TMNT, and now we're back to Heroes Unlimited for a brand new power category that we're going to be talking about for quite a while, because it has all these little facets, all these different variations, but we're just getting started today. This is the magic section for characters who do magic in any number of ways. Some superheroes achieve magic. Others have magic thrust upon them, and this page begins the category with one of the latter, the enchanted weapon subcategory. These are characters who don't necessarily know how to do magic per se, but they found a magical weapon, or rather, it found them, insert magic tinkling sound effect, and now they're the champion of justice or goodness or lightness or whatever. In coming days, we'll talk a little bit about what these characters can do, what these enchanted weapons get up to. But basically what we get on this page is a description of the concept, a little table you can use to roll what kind of melee weapon you have. It must be a melee weapon, no greater rune shotguns, at least not in this game. I guarantee you those are in Rifts. And then some miscellanea, you know, your skills, your hand-to-hand combat, your SDC, which interestingly for most characters it's like 20 or 30 or something. This character gets 4d6 base SDC, so if you roll really badly you could start with 4 SDC, which is really, really weak. Not what you want for a character who specializes in melee combat. But, you know, you'll take boxing, you'll take wrestling, you'll be fine. The dumbest thing on this page is not any of those things. This is very basic, you know, structure of the class kind of stuff. The dumbest thing comes in the flavor text, because this is the only place I can think of in Heroes Unlimited where we are introduced to a character type with a little story. There's fiction here, oddly enough, but it's half-ass fiction. As an example, let's look at Marvin Tecumseh, who finds a sword in a curio shop. The shopkeeper tells him that it is an ancient blade, maybe 1,000 years old. Marvin frowns. It appears far too sharp and new to be more than 100 years old. Heck, the shopkeeper might even make him in the basement. Still, there's something about the sword. It seems to feel good in his hands, almost inviting. Marvin buys the blade for much more than he can afford. What a chump I was, he thinks. I really blew it now. Without naming any names, I feel like maybe this is a true life story, plausibly, from the life of someone who has written a Palladium RPG. This seems like a staff that has a lot of guys on it who maybe spent too much on a sword at one time or another. Perhaps one of them was pictured with his sword he spent too much on, in a swimsuit issue of The Rifter, where he inexplicably dressed up as a samurai. But that's not the superhero part. Look, it can happen to the best of us. Sometimes you're walking down the street, you walk into an old curio shop, somebody tells you that a sword there is 1,000 years old, even though it looks brand new, and you're like, yes, I will give you all my money for this. It feels good in my hands. And then you walk home thinking, I'm ruined. I'm not going to make rent. Why did I buy another expensive sword? So that's the human portion of the story. But now comes the superhuman. And this is also where the storytelling gets weird, because it equivocates. And here I'm going to switch to my dramatic voice. At home, he holds the blade and gives it a whirl. Suddenly, Marvin is in a mist-filled forest. A beautiful woman, this could also be a wizard, knight, angel, child, glowing blob of energy, the sword itself, anything, smiles and says, Marvin, you are the new champion of light. Take this enchanted sword, Moonwind, or any name. A little parenthetical there. Editor's note, you do not have to name your sword Moonwind. And use its powers to crush the evil that would devour the light. Mixing your metaphors there slightly, Lady of the Lake, you don't typically use a sword to crush evil. You would use a mace or a hammer of light for that, but, you know, we're nitpicking here. We're nitpicking the Lady of the Lake. That is not nice. Marvin is stunned. A million questions race through his mind. Again, no specificity here, but before a syllable can trickle off his tongue, he's back in his room. Marv is certain he's going crazy, or was dreaming. He hesitantly reaches for the sword, picks it up, and mumbles to himself its name. Moonwind. With a flash, Marvin is garbed in an outlandish costume. Player's design. Yes, obviously, right? It's not like this character class comes with one outfit everyone has to wear. Anyway, back to the fiction. These little parentheticals make it very easy to have your mind wander in what is otherwise just an engrossing scene. His muscles rippling with power. Just that. Not a complete sentence, just an image. It's fucking Ezra Pound over here. It's just muscles rippling with power, just slicing that imagery real thin. He and the sword are one, and suddenly he understands the power it holds and how to use it. No words are spoken, but he knows, and a hero is born. So, I don't know why they felt the need to do this here and only here, to give us this little story about Marvin Tecumseh and how he became the guy who carries Moonwind. I don't know if we ever really got a superhero name for him per se, but you know, he's Moonwind's plus one. But what is the dumbest thing to me is that if you're going to use fiction like this, you know, we understand that it's an example. You really don't need to have these little parentheticals explaining that, like, it doesn't have to be a lady who tells you how to use your sword. It could be a blob. In fact, it doesn't say or, it says also. It says, a beautiful woman, this could also be a wizard, knight, angel, child, glowing blob of energy, the sword itself, anything. So it could be all of them. It could be a wizard knight who happens to be a young lady angel who is a glowing blob of energy, and that's the shape of the sword. Or maybe she just stands there in her resplendence and then holds out the sword, and the sword has a little mouth and it talks. This is an odd sort of complaint. It's like a minor style point because there's not really a lot of mechanical content on this page. So I decided to go ahead and take the author up on this offer to customize the story, since we got some time left on the clock, even for a short little podcast. So I'm going to do a Mad Lib. I'm using a number of random generators for this. I'm going to be generating the name of the sword with the Wild Elf name generator at 7th Sanctum. For those of you who've never done any online role-playing, this is 7thSanctum.com. It's a website where you can find random generators for all kinds of stuff. I'm going to be using the random superhero costume generator at springhole.net to fill in the blank on what kind of costume Marvin gets after his transformation and his muscles begin to ripple. And to determine what gives him his inspirational superhero speech, I'm using a random noun generator at desiquintans.com. That's DesiQuintans.com, the random noun generator. And of course, with the millions of questions attempting to trickle off of his tongue, we have to come up with a specific question that's on his mind when he transforms. So I'm going to be using Google for that. I'm going to roll up a random question word, you know, one of the who, what, when, where, why, how, and then we'll just see what comes up on Google. I'll randomly roll one of the top results, something that would be on everyone's mind. A hot topic is what Marvin is thinking as he transforms. So let's give this a try. Let's see how it goes. This is live to tape here. This is podcasting without a net. So we'll see. We begin back home in Marvin's basement apartment. At home, he holds the blade and gives it a whirl. Suddenly, Marvin is in a mist-filled forest. A beautiful cowbell smiles and says,
Marvin, you are the new champion of light. Take this enchanted sword, Battle Bull, and use its powers to crush the evil that would devour the light.
Marvin is stunned. A question races through his mind. Who did Princess Margaret marry? But before a syllable can trickle off his tongue, he's back in his room. Marv is certain he's going crazy, or was dreaming. He hesitantly reaches for the sword, picks it up and mumbles to himself its name, Battle Bull. With a flash, Marvin is garbed in an outlandish costume, a stylish jumpsuit designed in oceanic colors, including a short cape and a pair of goggles. A hero is born. I shortened the end there. There was no more Mad Lib content, so I hope you don't mind. I think that's a nice punchy ending. You can really put it in anywhere. Not too bad. The cowbell makes sense with Battle Bull. I'm not sure why this cow-themed champion of light is wearing oceanic colors, but not a totally nonsensical superhero. Let's do one more to see the range of options that we're talking about here for this power category. Maybe we'll develop one of these two characters as we move forward. Okay, take two. At home, he holds the blade and gives it a whirl. Suddenly, Marvin is in a mist-filled forest. A beautiful almond smiles and says,
Marvin, you are the new champion of light. Take this enchanted sword, Chillberry, and use its powers to crush the evil that would devour the light.
Marvin is stunned. A question races through his mind.
How fast does hair grow?
But before a syllable can trickle off his tongue, he's back in his room. Marv is certain he's going crazy, ... or was dreaming. He hesitantly reaches for the sword, picks it up, and mumbles to himself its name,
Chillberry.
With a flash, Marvin is garbed in outlandish costume, a Victorian outfit designed in gray, etc., etc., a hero is born. Man, I think Chilberry's got a lot of promise. Nothing against Battle Bull, but I just feel like Chilberry's having a cool day. You know, he got up, it's his day off, he got high, obviously, he went downtown, he bought a sword he couldn't afford, then he came home and he had a dream about a smiling Almond telling him to dress up in Victorian clothes and wield the magical blade Chilberry. That's cool. That's a fun life. And it's going to be a fun superhero. So we'll see what options exist for the chosen wielder of Chilberry as we proceed through this section. But yeah, the dumbest thing on this page, I think that the fiction opening is like fairly hacky, pretty cliche, but if you're going to go for it, go for it. You don't need to interrupt yourself with like, note, a lady doesn't have to give you this sword. It could be a wizard. It's just a little hard to get into fiction when it's constantly interrupting itself to say, you know, didn't like that concrete detail? Here are some others you could choose from. Have it your way. Today we're discussing page 145 of Heroes Unlimited. We're just beginning the magic section. We talked a little bit yesterday about how that section opens. We did some Mad Libs, and we created the magical blade Chilberry via a complex multi-website random generation process. I'm not proud of what we did yesterday on the podcast. I hope it was fun to listen to, but it was a tremendous amount of time investment. A lot of setup really went into making the Mad Lib as needlessly complicated as it can be, very much in the spirit of a Palladium podcast. But at least that page gave us plenty to talk about. Once again, today, we are left with a full page illustration, which is always a tricky day for the podcast. Heroes Unlimited has a lot more of these than Ninjas and Super Spies did. By and large, they're just fine. So there's not really an art quality issue to talk about much of the time. So I've always got to get creative. And today, what I've decided to do is take this opportunity to discuss something that is going to happen throughout this book, but it's never going to be the dumbest thing on any given page. So now is a good time to talk about it. And it's tangentially related to what we see depicted on this page. So let's start with the illustration. I may or may not put this on the Instagram. I don't think I'm going to be critiquing this art enough to justify posting it. But basically what we have is a Superman-looking guy, but he's a magical Superman. He's got a cape. It's got like a star motif on it, but the stars actually come off the back of the cape and form a trail behind him. It's kind of cool. Looks very magical. His legs are a little skinny. His boots look a little big on him. But overall, it's a very clean, classic, caped superhero look. He's holding a sword. Now, I am not a sword guy, but the first thing that struck me about this page was this sword, because its pommel is like a little eagle head. It looks very feathery too. It doesn't look like a sculpted approximation of an eagle's head. It's just sort of like smooth. You can see the little ruffles. It looks a little windswept. So I don't know if this is like a full, like life-sized eagle head with feathers on the bottom of the sword or what. But in any case, it's a bit of a goofy look on this sword. However, I looked up eagle pommel on Google and found that it's not out of the question that you would find a sword with a pommel like this in a military, for example, in the United States, or in ancient Rome, which is maybe what this author was going for, because this sword is short and broad, possibly a Roman legionnaire's gladius. It looks maybe a little broad for that, but you know, it's comic book art. All the people are twice as thick as they should be, so why not the swords? Anyway, initially I thought, well, this is a bummer, because if this sword is anything like realistic, if it's not totally stupid to have an eagle head hanging off the bottom of your sword, then I'm stumped. I don't know what I can say about this page. However, once again, the day is saved by close reading. As it turns out, what's depicted here is actually a low-key class feature of the enchanted weapon category. Unlike almost any other class, the enchanted weapon character gets a special piece of gear, at least potentially, that some players may miss. And it is mentioned in this category's weapons and armor entry, an entry that is almost always useless. This is the honorary dumbest thing on this page. Honorary because it's not exactly on this page, but it's our topic of discussion today. So this game has a ton of playable character types. Now, some of these are power categories, some of these are power categories with subcategories within them, but basically, there's something like 21 different types of superhero you can play with their own write-ups. And while the sections in this game are pretty free-form, each section kind of has its own format, its own content, the other stuff section of each power category lays out some basics of the class, like alignment, level of education, attacks per melee, SDC, just like basic mechanical content you need to know about your character based on which category they're in. And every one of these playable superhero types, save one, has a weapons and armor entry, describing what kind of weapons and armor this character gets. For example, for the hardware weapons character, it was, quote, unless the character is extremely wealthy, only conventional weaponry and equipment are available. In fact, this phrase appears verbatim for 10 of the 20 character types that have this entry. By the way, the odd one out is Mutant Animal, which is imported from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and has its own thing. You gotta scavenge equipment out of junkyards and stuff. So yeah, half of them, it is exactly that phrase, which amounts to no information. you can, with whatever your budget is, life savings, or maybe your class gives you some kind of equipment budget, like the hardware characters, whatever. In any case, what you have access to is basically what's in the equipment section. Two more of the character classes, Enchanted Object and Enchanted Weapon, tell you basically the same thing, with the exception of your one magic gadget that makes you a superhero. So Enchanted Object is, with the exception of your Enchanted Object, unless the character is extremely wealthy, only conventional weaponry and equipment, blah, blah, blah. Then in three more cases, there's a note that tells you that unless you work for an agency that supplies you with special stuff, unless you're extremely wealthy, conventional, blah, blah, blah. And then there are a couple of characters who also only get conventional weaponry, but the book also complements them using the exact same verbiage. It's very strange. The hardware electrical, hardware mechanical, and hardware weapons expert characters all get that same exact entry, unless the character is extremely wealthy, etc., etc., etc. However, the hardware analytical genius gets different language to express that he's fun and special. Quote, anything goes with this wild guy, but he won't waste time reinventing the wheel, so he usually has conventional weaponry, body armor, and equipment available. Exactly the same thing. Conventional equipment. However, he could totally have cool equipment if he wanted to, but he's too busy with his wild and crazy lifestyle. And at first I thought this was, you know, the well-established favoritism of the hardware section toward the analytical genius, right? This is why his workshop is rent-free and has a pool table. But in fact, the very same language appears for the hunter-slash-vigilante special training character, who is not known to build laser can openers, is not, in fact, a fun-loving guy. He's like an urban, big-game hunter of criminals, basically. But likewise, anything goes with this wild guy. Just for some reason, there's like a special spiritual kinship between the analytical genius and the grim urban hunter. They are two wild and crazy guys. Anyway, the point of all this is that this section appears for basically every playable character type in this game, and in almost every single case, provides no useful information. There are like three categories that get useful information in this section. Number one, if you're an alien and you need an environmental suit to live on Earth, you have one plus a spare. Other than that, conventional weaponry, blah, blah, blah. Number two, the secret operative special training character. Conventional weaponry, blah, 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 but if you work for an agency, they may give you stuff, and they may be willing to outfit your team, although not to the extent that they outfit you. That's useful additional information. So, okay, that's two out of 21. And then three, the ancient master special training category. This is like the wrinkly old man kung fu master. Instead of conventional weapons and armor, you get like a dozen spears and knives and a bicycle. Other than that, every category gives you the same spiel with minor variation that no change, your character has standard equipment. But there's a little hidden feature in the enchanted weapon category because it mentions, quote, remember that, quote, battle dress, a costume, is magically created whenever the character goes into action. So naturally you're thinking of like a Captain Marvel or a Sailor Moon, right? This creates a costume for you to wear, just a little bit of flavor. But in fact, on the next page, 146, we see that the weapon, quote, creates a costume or, quote, battle dress out of thin air. The battle dress can be of classic comic book superhero appearance or include full body armor, usually an ancient style of armor. Whatever the costume slash battle dress looks like, the basic design will usually reflect its owner's personality and imagination. Although the costume can be damaged, ripped, and torn, it always reappears fresh and new. So this is not just another costume. This can be full-on body armor if you want it to be, and only usually of an ancient style. It's based on your personality and interests. So if you, like the authors of this game, are interested in modern firearms and military slash police body armor, your idea of superheroism might include, quite sensibly, some form of protection from the massive hails of bullets that seem to be the main instruments of both justice and injustice in this superhero game. I mean, laser beams and power blasts are great, but it's really bullets that are doing hundreds and hundreds of points of damage. When you really dig into the details here, this is a major advantage for the enchanted weapon character. If you can get full-on modern armor, you can get full-body, like, riot armor with an AR of 17. That means you need a 17 to damage the character behind the armor. Anything less than that on your strike roll, and you're inflicting damage on the armor that has 280 SDC, which comes back in full every time the character transforms. You essentially have infinite armor. I do not exaggerate when I say infinite armor is the endless breadsticks of the magical combat world. It is that good. All you got to do is real quick, you know, Moonwind off, Moonwind on, your armor is back to full after its 280 SDC have been depleted. You got bullets bouncing off you left and right if you've got like class 4 full-on ceramic plate armor. And this is important because you're not necessarily a physical powerhouse. I mean, you might have a power like invulnerability, but you might be a squishy spellcaster with an enchanted sword. You might be a melee combatant who's stuck with like 30 SDC because the SDC for this class isn't great. You know, you may only get two minor superpowers. They might be extraordinary physical beauty and extraordinary mental affinity. Just beauty and charm. Whosoever holds this hammer, if she be worthy, shall possess the power of Miss Universe. Who knows what powers you have? But what we do know is that you got a badass magical melee weapon, and you're out there trying to beat down supervillains with it in close combat, and so armor would not be a bad idea. Therefore, as for page 145, editor's note, we were originally supposed to be talking about page 145, I think this illustration does show a dereliction of duty by this little magical eagle head. If you're a military magical weapon, you've been around since the ancient days of Rome, you represent the legendary martial prowess of the Roman legions. How are you going to let the goddamn chosen one run around in a spandex onesie when he can have infinite regenerating armor? I mean, even if he's invulnerable, let's not forget, invulnerable doesn't mean invulnerable in this game. No character is totally immune to everything. You're going to run up against somebody at some point who can damage you, whatever your defenses are. And when you do, you don't want to be wearing a costume with the same protective value as body paint, if you can help it. Not every hero can. You know, I seem to recall reading somewhere that unless the character is extremely wealthy, only conventional weaponry and armor will be available. So not everybody can have riot armor. But if you're the chosen one, you know, your good pal Chilberry can hook you up. Unlike this little eagle who is asleep on the job. Or, you know, maybe is looking to make this a transitional chosen one. I mean, who knows? If this costume, as fanciful and fun as it is an expression of this character's deep personality, maybe the war spirit of the Roman Legion is like, let the chosen one do things his way. Sure, we can always choose again. Anyway, that's a decades old pet peeve and now it's off my chest. The dumbest thing on this page is that this little eagle head isn't protecting his boy. And one of the many dumb things about this book is the endless repetition of the weapons and armor section for category after category after category, providing no useful information. And what the hell, bonus, good dumb thing to battle dress, which is a cool idea, a fun thing to design for your character, and greatly enhances the melee capabilities of this melee-based character type. Today we're discussing page 146 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the magic section. We're talking about the enchanted weapon character type. This is the champion of either order or chaos who was chosen by a magical rune weapon to be a superhero or supervillain. We've talked about the basics of this character type. Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty, the specific powers that the weapon grants. Much has been made of how this power makes you the chosen one in grand magical sword tradition, you know, a very resonant, legendary, and folkloric idea. And this page does not disappoint. This character class may not be the most powerful, but it is the most Mary Sue, maybe, of all the categories. If you're old enough to remember the days of like text-only online role-playing, where people would like come into the room and have their, you know, macro of their entry into a room, their dramatic entry, or like you'd click on their profile and they'd have a, you know, a picture that they stole from some Angel Fire Final Fantasy VII website of Sephiroth, but they had like recolored it, or it was like an alternate badass version of Sonic the Hedgehog, and then they'd have like the big block of text describing how cool they are. That is the aesthetic of the enchanted weapon character. It is very 90s. It's pretty impressive that they captured this aesthetic. Let's talk about how they did it. Number one, your weapon is totally indestructible. The blade never dulls, it never cracks or breaks, it always looks like new. Your weapon is sharp and shiny at all times. It's well balanced, it's lightweight. If you love adjectives but you don't know anything about swords, it can sometimes be hard to do overwrought sword descriptions. well-balanced, and lightweight. Classic standbys in the sword-hyping genre. Likewise, at a loss to make a sword visually interesting color-wise, like metal is metal, what am I supposed to say about it? Do I really have to resort to a chrome sword blade? No, you don't. That's too far. Palladium's got your back, though. It gives you a small menu of sufficiently awesome sword colors to choose from. Black, gray, blue-gray, dark red, blood red, or bright gold or silver-colored metal. Only the coolest crayons will be used to draw this magic sword. I like that you have your choice between dark red and blood red. That's a character moment. So alright, you got a cool-looking sword that never breaks. It's an unusual color, but that's not cool enough. It also needs to be better than other swords, in a more concrete way. Well, you're in luck, because your magical weapon does, at random, 3d6 to 6d6 damage you roll when you create the weapon. As measured in katanas, that's 1 to 2 katanas worth of damage. That's phenomenal damage for a melee weapon. And then it's got all these additional features. If you are a champion of order, which is to say, like, a good aligned character with a good aligned weapon, your sword can kill zombies, your sword can cut golems, your sword can slay vampires, your sword can kill werewolves, demons, even godlings. Nobody else can use your cool sword, they're not cool enough. You're hard to burn, you're hard to freeze, you're hard to magic against. Magic upon. Magic upon? Magic unto? You're hard to do magic at. You can see invisible things. This is very 90s online role-playing, like, Lizabelle Silvershadow slinks into the room, engulfed in opalescent shadow. None of you see her as her elven grace makes her effectively invisible. Tilde, tilde, tilde. And you're like, nah, I'm not going down like that. Type, type, type. Lord Bloodgrave walks brazenly up to the elven princess, not hesitating for a minute or even aware that she was invisible to lesser eyes. When he sees the look of confusion on her face, he would look to his blood-red sword. Oh, my apologies, m'lady, he said chagrinedly. Mine enchanted blade giveth me the power to see the unseeable. Do you wish to dine alone tonight? He roguishly winked. I'm doing a really good 90s text-only roleplay here, and I just hope you motherfuckers can appreciate it. If you can't, this is going to be like a weird digression for you. Anyway, along with the aforementioned battle dress, you are like stacked with cool powers. Badass costume of your own design, optionally incorporating infinite armor. Your weapon does all kinds of damage, and you can slice into anybody from a vampire to a werewolf to goddamn Achilles with it. It is mandated by the rules to be a badass color, and always shiny and sharp. What more could you ask for? Well, what about you, though? I mean, the sword is cool, but it's not going to look cool hanging off some schlub. Well, we got you covered there, too. In the bargain, you get your ideal self. Quote, whenever the character is transformed into battle dress, becomes a hero, he or she is magically, quote, beefed up. I really question the use of the quotation marks there, because there is no literal sense of beefed up that I think would make any sense in this context. I'm not sure what the confusion would be. I mean, I guess the sword could put you in a meat dress like Lady Gaga. That is your prerogative. Anyway, starting over. Whenever the character is transformed into battle dress, becomes a hero, he or she is magically beefed up and appears as an ideal version of himself. Colon. So what follows is the ideal version of yourself. Just that part isn't up to you. I mean, we all know what an ideal person is. Tall, 6 to 7 feet, strong and muscular, no flab or physical infirmities, an adult, if the hero is a kid or teenager, and gets +1d4, +3 to physical beauty in heroic form. So when you wield your magical weapon, you know, when you hold Chillberry aloft above your head and intone the magic words, chill out, you are garbed in your battle dress, you beef up into an ideal version of yourself. You get swole, you get muscular, you supposedly get strong, although this doesn't actually raise your physical strength. None of your stats go up except for your beauty, so this is just, it's the level of fitness we're all shooting for, where you look like a celebrity, but you can't necessarily bench press a lot or do a lot of squats. Your flab disappears. If you're young, you grow up into your prime, you get pretty, and male or female, you grow to 6 to 7 feet tall, which, as far as the authors of this game were concerned, is the perfect height. If you're a 5 foot tall woman with an indomitable personality who is worthy to wield a magical blade, like my wife, for example, this power category is great for that. It respects what you've got going on, but the forces of order have some notes for you. For you to be an ideal woman, they really need you to be like 7 feet tall. The Lords of Order, aka Kevin Sambita, really just need you to put on a couple of feet
for maximum justice. Like, here's, hold on, my Kevin Sambita impression.
All I want to do is help you turn into a giant woman.
It is, and I mean, and then it's going to go on to tell you, like, the superpowers you get. You know, all the usual power fantasy stuff. But if you want to live your fashion fantasy, this is the category for you. Because not only are you powerful, but you look great. You're super cool. All the other role-playing kids in the chat room are going to be very impressed. Although I think the dumbest thing in this page is specifying that the coolest possible lady is between 6 and 7 feet tall. Not that I'm saying 6 to 7 feet is not an ideal size for a woman. An ideal size is the essential distinction there. There's a webcomic I've mentioned on the podcast before, Alfie. Chapter 10 of that comic has Lydia, who's got to be like 6'2 or 6'3, in a graphic sexual encounter with Alfie, who's like 3 foot tall. And I got that shit bookmarked. My credentials on height diversity are not to be questioned. But I don't think it's cool to tell a woman that if she's not 7 feet tall, she's not quite measuring up to the standards of the ideal body. Or a man. But I mean, it's not so far from the range of what you would expect from a traditional male superhero. You know, 6'4 is a height you might give your male superhero anyway. Whereas if you're pegging the ideal woman at around 6'5, you're pretty much narrowing the field to Big Barda. But she is the ideal woman. I don't know. My feelings about this are conflicted. Anyway, I realize this is thin ice for a male podcaster, so I'll be very happy to get off it tomorrow when we get into some of the less ideal body-oriented features of the Magical Weapons of Order on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Today we're discussing page 147 of Heroes Unlimited. We are still in the magic section talking about enchanted weapons. This page concludes the section on enchanted weapons of order, weapons designed to help you fight for justice if you're a champion of good, and it begins the section on weapons of chaos or evil. We're not going to talk about them much today. One minor point to note, they do most of the same things for you that a weapon of order does. You know, they beef you up, they take away your flab, they enhance your height to the objectively perfect human height of 6 to 7 feet, but they don't make you prettier, which I consider to be a shocking reversal given the fact that aliens who look like demons are the sexiest of all aliens. But more about evil tomorrow. Most of this page is taken up by the specific powers of the weapons of order. These powers, as you might expect, are good-themed powers. For example, this list starts on the previous page. It gives us a healing touch, the ability to shoot lightning or fire, which are like bright and positive kinds of attacks, as opposed to like the dark power we're going to get later from evil weapons. These magical weapons can give you the ability to speak various languages or cast the spell Words of Truth so that you compel people to tell the truth. Powers of good and justice. These weapons are very concerned with their mission, and they want to give you powers to help you pursue it. And sometimes that overweening righteousness can be a liability, as is the case with the dumbest thing on this page, the Mystic Shield ability. This is the longest and most complicated power that a weapon of order can grant. In essence, it's a magical force field that has two modes. You can summon it as a sort of energy kite shield or target shield on one of your arms, or you can extend it into a big bubble that protects you and some people standing close to you, just like a solid bubble around you, defending you from attacks. The thing's got like 200 SDC in either form. It can be summoned up to once every other round, but only up to 10 times per day, so there is a limited amount of time you can use it. Unlike your battle dress armor, it is not an infinite font of SDC. As a bubble, it's just a straight-up obstacle between you and attacks. As a shield, you can parry with it, but when you parry an attack, the shield takes the damage from the attack. Overall, I'm not impressed with the shield mode. First of all, normally when you parry attacks with a weapon or whatever, the weapon doesn't take damage. I mean, the worst we've seen so far in Heroes Unlimited is that if you try to parry a vibro weapon or an energy weapon with a conventional weapon, it'll get little dings in it, like little dents or pits. However, this magical shield is more fragile, apparently, than conventional weapons. It does take damage every time you parry with it. Nonetheless, it could be perfectly useful to be able to summon a shield from nothing to parry deadly attacks if you don't happen to have a weapon at hand. In this case, you're playing a character whose whole thing is that they have an indestructible melee weapon. In fact, if they're not holding it, they can't use this power. The shield is pretty much useless. Now, I mean, there are shield and sword fighting styles in the Palladium system. There are like paired weapon things you could do maybe, but not in Heroes Unlimited. I mean, this game doesn't even have a shield weapon proficiency. So for core Heroes Unlimited, this is really useless. Now, theoretically, you could bash somebody with this magic shield, I guess, but I wouldn't allow it, and I'll tell you why. Your magic weapon, devoted as it is to good and justice, is extremely specific about how you can use this force field. And we can see that in the bubble mode. Quote, The shield is defensive slash protective in nature and cannot be used to trap or imprison someone. The shield bubble won't appear because the intended use is contrary to its purpose, which is to shield. Now, in most games, this note would not be necessary. Here in Heroes Unlimited, where it is really like the exasperated GM versus the asshole players, this note is needed to explain you cannot use this power to, like, trap someone next to you so you can beat them to death. And in fact, in Heroes Unlimited, we need to go further to prevent determined players from trying to work around this restriction. Quote, the weapon will only activate the shield to directly protect someone from attack. Duration, the shield will remain up until destroyed, all SDC depleted, the danger appears to have passed, or its champion wills it to vanish. So with your magic weapon, you can create a bubble of solid force. However, your magic weapon is absolutely committed to this force field never being used for anything but shielding people. Not only won't it functionally trap someone, it won't even appear if your intent is not to shield. It will only appear to protect someone. And wait, I'm sorry, that's too broad. The language had to be more specific, and it was. The bubble will only appear to directly protect someone from attack. Can you use it to stop somebody running off a cliff? No. Can you use it to stop somebody who's charging at someone else to kill them? No. Can you use it to protect someone so that it becomes obvious they're not going to be able to be hurt to prevent violence from breaking out? No. You're the chosen one, but your weapon does not trust you and will not engage the bubble except in cases of a clear and immediate and direct danger. In fact, even if it gives you the bubble, even if it deigns to give you the bubble in this instance, that bubble is gone the moment the danger has passed. The bubble disappears when you tell it to disappear, when it's broken, or when the danger appears to be over. Which means, and this is the dumbest thing on this page, your weapon is so devoted to not letting you use its force field for anything but shielding that it can be head faked. I mean, seriously, it says the bubble disappears when the danger appears to have passed, which means if you use your weapon of superpower righteousness to protect your friend from the demonic hordes, if the attacker, like, plays dead for a minute or pretends to have hurt their hand and, like, turned their back or fakes like they're going to go attack somebody else and it seems like the danger has passed, your blade of righteousness will cut you the fuck off. No more bubble. The attack is over. You get no more bubble minutes than are absolutely necessary. Any more than that, and you're gaming the system. And you know the demon's just going to turn around and punch your friend now. Every time you have to raise this thing to protect someone from an attack, you have to make a parry roll. With a flat +3 bonus, you don't get your normal parry bonus. And if you fail, the shield doesn't go up in time. So head faking this shield is actually a really good way to get through it. Because once it's up, and you have to pound through it. But if you can get the magic weapon to drop the shield, then you got a chance to get in there before it can raise it again. I just love that basically this is like a Holy Avenger, right? For those familiar with the D&D terminology. This is specifically a magic weapon of good and justice wielded by a chosen champion of good and justice. And there is still like zero trust. You may be a paladin, but you're a player character. And we know your munchkin ass is going to try to use this force field to hurt people. And the forces of good are having none of it. Your shield privileges are highly conditional. You are on paladin probation your whole crime-fighting career. But this does only apply to protecting other people, like with the bubble. If you want to make a useless shield and parry with that instead of your invincible blade, then have at it. Parry all day. Or rather, until the SDC runs out. Today we're discussing page 148 of Heroes Unlimited. We're just wrapping up the enchanted weapons section in the magic power category. And today we're discussing weapons of chaos, that is to say, evil magic weapons. These are weapons that represent the cosmological forces of evil and chaos. These weapons only function for characters who are going to advance the cause of evil in the cosmos. And they grant powers similar to the weapons of order that we've been talking about up to this point, but evil flavored. And let me just come out and say it, evil is better than good. While this weapon does not make you more beautiful, like a weapon of good does, and that's a disadvantage, it still makes you look cool. It still makes you strong and beefy. It still magically stretches you out to 7 feet tall, aka the perfect height. And it grants you these badass powers. None of this healing touch. None of this words of truth to make people be honest with each other and communicate. We're talking about the powers of the abyss. They are very impressive. Instead of the ability to shoot lightning or fire, you get a power bolt. A, quote, pitch black bolt of icy cold. This thing's got a 1,000-foot range. It does up to 6d6 damage, depending on how evil you are. If you are diabolic, you get 6d6 damage. Only 3d6 if you're an anarchist. So if you're merely selfish, this is not so good. But if you're a full-on psychopath, 6d6 damage, 1,000 feet away, and it does full damage to supernatural beings and invulnerable beings. Being able to do 6d6 a shot from 1,000 feet away against invulnerable superheroes, that is some high-quality evil, my friends. And superheroes may have trouble closing that distance because another option you have is to animate and control the dead. You can raise zombies, up to 20 at a time. Probably the most cool and iconic ability of the Weapons of Chaos, though, is the Portal of Fear. I'm not going to read you the giant chunk of rules text for this thing, but basically, you create a huge, blobby patch of darkness, and then within a few seconds, about 14 tentacles, giant tentacles, stretch out of this thing and start grappling everybody and pulling them into the darkness. And once they go into the darkness, then they get spit out like 20 feet, panicked, terrified by what they saw inside. This is some mythos shit. Great battlefield control option, super thematic and cool. I mean, who doesn't want to summon tentacles from beyond? This makes up for not being exceptionally pretty. And look, if you want to be exceptionally pretty, take extraordinary physical beauty as one of the two minor powers that this weapon gives you. I mean, you have the option to be as beautiful as the forces of good, but the forces of good sure as hell do not have an Eldritch tentacles option. I mean, I guess you could take the tentacles superpower, but they're not as Eldritch when they're your tentacles. I mean, let's be honest. Nobody's losing any sand looking at Dr. Octopus. So overall, A plus for evil magic weapons. Very powerful, very evil, very cool. I got two minor problems, two candidates for dumbest thing on this very dark and evil and cool page. Number one, the Weapon of Chaos. The Weapon of Chaos, mind you, also gets the Mystic Shield ability from last page with the very same restrictions. This is absurd. It's one thing to have, like, I can believe your Holy Avenger, you know, your persnickety, justice-obsessed Weapon of Order would be so adamant about you not misusing your Force Bubble privileges that it sometimes gets faked out and lets you get punched through your force field just because it's being a very strict constructionist in terms of when you're allowed to use your force field. I'll buy it. But a Weapon of Chaos? I mean, you're a full-on psychopath wielding the Axe of Random Violence, an axe devoted to the cosmic forces of violent trolling, and it will not let you rules lawyer your way into blocking or trapping somebody with that magic bubble. Like, you're cutting a bloody swath through the city for no goddamn reason. And then you're like, hey, you know what would be funny is let me trap somebody in this magic protective bubble. And all of a sudden, it's not fun anymore. The Axe of Random Violence gets very serious. Like, no, fuck you. There are limits. That's not what the force field is for. Like, in all seriousness, dude, that's not cool. This isn't NOM. There are rules. So that limitation is pretty goofy. But, you know, for pure irony, I think I have to say the dumbest thing on this page takes a little bit of explanation, but basically, the Weapon of Good will only work for you if you're straight up good, right? Conversely, the Weapon of Evil normally only works for people who are evil, but will sometimes work for people who are advancing the cause of evil. So, like, if you're a good person, but having this weapon and using it is going to advance the cause of evil, then the weapon might work for you. However, the weapon is going to push you along that path. Quote, GMs may also want to consider the possibility that many evil artifact weapons will have possessing, controlling, charming, or suggestive powers of some type to corrupt or influence their wielders. So this thing is like the One Ring from Lord of the Rings. It's going to, like, tempt you and push you and gradually corrupt you. Maybe even possess you. Except, whereas the Weapons of Order confer upon their wielders a generic bonus to save against magic and resistance against fire and cold, Weapons of Chaos confer upon their wielders a smaller generic bonus against magic spells and enchantments, plus a giant plus 4 to save against horror factor and possession. Furthermore, one of the powers you can get from your Weapon of Chaos, if it's aligned with the forces of darkness, is the Power of Darkness. Quote, at night or in darkness, the villain linked to the weapon is impervious to poisons and toxic gases, plus 10% prowl in all rogue skills. I sort of love that the Power of Darkness makes you a better hacker if you hack in the dark. And plus 1 to save versus magic, horror factor, and possession. Saves versus possession are not too common in this game. But if you are the wielder of a magic weapon designed to corrupt and possess its wielder, that poor magic weapon is going to have a hell of a time. Because, ironically, when you wield it, you get a giant fucking plus 5 bonus at night and in the dark against possession, and a +3 bonus against anything else magical it tries to do to you. It's like the One Ring, except instead of giving you the power of invisibility, it gives you the power to resist mind control and temptation, an uncharacteristic design misstep from the forces of evil. I love, too, that you get that extra +1 conditional bonus at night or in darkness, because it means that if you have an evil weapon of darkness, right, like you've got the enchanted spear of midnight, and so you're a real badass at dark, and you do all your super villainy starting at the stroke of midnight, you know, you transform and you go out and do crimes. Naturally, this evil spear is trying to corrupt you, but it makes you too resistant to be effectively possessed at midnight. So it has to wait until like the morning after, like the brightest time of day, like, you know, it's a late night doing crimes. So you wake up about 10 o'clock, take your shower, get your house in order, brush your teeth. Then you go out to have like your breakfast is more of a brunch at like 11:30. So it's bright, the sun is shining, the birds are singing. You're at your neighborhood cafe having a latte and a muffin, and it's at that moment that the forces of darkness strike. Because you're too goddamn hard to possess at night, your spear has to wait until you're chilling out, eating a banana nut muffin in direct sunlight, until you're finally weak enough for the forces of hell to overtake your mind. Between the two, I'm going to say, having evil weapons that possess their wielders, but that also give a giant bonus to resist that possession, that's just bad evil craftsmanship. That's the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 149 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the magic section, and today we are discussing the enchanted object subcategory. We've just finished up with superheroes and supervillains who wield enchanted weapons of good or of evil. This subcategory is for non-weapon objects with an indifferent relationship to morality. They're just magical objects that you get, and they give you power. I hope you've enjoyed our little excursion over the past few days into the aesthetically as well as morally charged world of enchanted weapons, because this page is not going to be quite so flavorful. It is really a design discussion that we got to have today. The enchanted object category is bullshit. And part of that is there seems to be no clear vision of what you're supposed to be getting out of this category. It is of only mechanical interest. It's got pretty much no flavor. The basics are as follows. First of all, it's a small object. It says here it could be something like a medallion, a pendant, a talisman, or a ring, or it could be clothing, like a helmet or a belt or a gauntlet, and it gives you powers. It's not affiliated with any particular alignment. Anybody can use it. The object has a bunch of PPE, potential psychic energy. This is the energy source used to power magical abilities in Heroes Unlimited. And this is where we begin to see the mechanical strangeness of the enchanted object. This is kind of like the power category that breaks all the rules for no clearly explained reason. First of all, you get a solid chunk of PPE. You start with more than like a wizard would, say, but it never goes up. And while the enchanted object can give you spells or superpowers, in either case, they use potential psychic energy. So even if you have a superpower, which could normally be used freely, the enchanted object only gives you this power when you spend points out of like the PPE battery, which is a very swingy mechanic because it says here, once activated, the powers remain active for 24 hours or until the character stops them. And each power costs 15 PPE to activate. So this is extremely weird because let's say you have a super superpower like invulnerability, right? Makes you basically invulnerable from any conventional physical harm. Costs you 15 PPE to turn that on in the morning, and then you're good all day. Invincible from harm for 24 hours. Unless for some reason you needed to make yourself vulnerable again. You know, you need to get an injection or something. On the other hand, let's say that you had a power like shooting fire blasts out of your hands. That's going to cost you 15 PPE a pop, which is going to add up much more quickly. So this like theoretical balancing factor doesn't really work across the board. Many of the best powers could be activated and kept on all day and be a real steal for 15 PPE, while as other minor powers that are of instantaneous duration are going to be way too expensive at this rate. You know, it's bad enough if heightened sense of smell is your only superpower, but then to say you can also only sniff 10 times per day seems excessively punishing. Like a magic weapon, an enchanted object can give you spells or superpowers or a combination of the two. You can roll on a table or you can choose. Oddly enough, this table includes options that are strictly superior to other options. Like, among the superpowers, it's apples and oranges. Would you rather have 3 minor powers or 1 major power or 1 minor power plus 3 spells? you know, you could make a case for any of them depending on what you want to build. But with the spells, one of the options is 3 spells from level 1 to 4 and 8 spells from levels 5 to 8, whereas another option is you get 8 spells from levels 1 to 6 and 8 spells from levels 7 to 12. More spells, better spells. So if you were picking, there's no reason you wouldn't pick the best option. That's not where the random rolls end, though. In keeping with the weird design of this subcategory, your powers slash spells also get a random power level from 4th to 7th level. Keep in mind, we're talking about a long, long period of real lifetime before you get to something like 7th level. Even 4th level is maybe quite a ways out. Many months of play to get there. This character starts at that power level with their powers and spells, which once again is like highly variable how much difference that makes. Some superpowers barely advance at all when you level. To go back to invulnerability, never really gets better. Extraordinary physical strength or endurance, flatline, never gets better. So it doesn't even matter what you roll on this table. Conversely, the shoot power blasts type superpowers do more and more damage every single level in most cases. And likewise, some of the spells have better duration, more damage, based on what level you are. This is probably the worst straight-up design decision on this page. A great example of mechanical carelessness. Even if every spell and superpower in this game were appropriate to give to a first-level character at 7th-level power level, which I don't think they are, do you want every future designer in your system to have to worry that their 7th-level power is going to end up in the hands of a first-level character? No, I mean, something appropriate for a 7th-level character could be game-breaking for a first-level character, but this one power category makes it an issue. It's important to note, though, that your power level never rises, so you don't get the level-by-level benefit of your superpower or spells. You roll an initial level, and then it just stays there. So this character is like on a straight line in terms of power, while the other characters are starting lower and eventually rising higher. Why did they choose this for the enchanted object? I have no idea. Like, this isn't an issue for the enchanted weapon. But for some reason, the enchanted object, like, it makes you a 7th level badass right out of the gate. But then, after a couple years, once the campaign has hit 7th level, now everybody else passes you by in power level. For some reason. I don't know. There's no logic or, like, intent that I can find. Then you also get this, like, random-ass bonus ability that's tagged on. You can either pick it or roll it from a table, and it's just apparently random, like invulnerable to fire, invisible, can't be poisoned, bonus versus psionics for some reason. One of these is plus 1d4 to any attribute, which is notable because, as I've mentioned repeatedly, it's hard to get a bonus to IQ. There's no superpower that gives it to you. You know, the hardware category gives you a plus 1 IQ. I think there might be a couple of mutant animals that give you a bonus to IQ. But that's a very niche power category. There's the brain boost in the experiment section that raises it to a flat value, like we did with Olympus Mons. If you roll a poor IQ, brain boost would seem to be the way to go. On the other hand, if you roll a good IQ, like if you roll a 16 plus, which means that you get to roll an extra d6, so you're going to end up with at least a 17, I think your best option to make the smartest possible character based on your good starting roll is weirdly to have an enchanted object, and then pick this option and then roll an extra d4 to add to your IQ. Again, this is one of those strange little byways of this system. Like, who would have thought, without this kind of close reading, that if you're trying to optimize for skill usage, if you roll an already strong IQ, your best option is to have, like, a magical belt that gives you superpowers, and then, oh, also, by the way, allows you to add 1d4 to your IQ. Superpowers can't do it, psionics can't do it, magic itself can't do it, but for some reason, those magical belts, I don't know, I can't understand this class, it's hard to even talk about it, I don't know what the point, like what the intent is. And in fact, the next thing on this table is even more puzzling. One of the random-ass powers you can choose to get as a bonus from your enchanted object is, quote, impervious to magic, but reduce hit points and physical SDC by half. Furthermore, the character cannot gain additional hit points as he slash she grows in experience, nor SDC from additional physical training. What? Total imperviousness to magic, which is, like, already a highly swingy ability. In a magic-heavy campaign, that is incredibly powerful. Like, if you're playing a superhero, God forbid, in a Beyond the Supernatural game, invulnerability to magic is, like, way off the charts powerful. But you have to reduce your SDC and hit points by half. Why? Why are you so feeble? And you can't gain any SDC from physical training, so I guess your body doesn't respond to exercise? Why? And your hit points don't increase. I mean, everybody's hit points increase. That's a core mechanic of the game. Why don't you gain HP? And if you're playing like not in Beyond the Supernatural, but in a standard kitchen sink, you know, superhero setting, you're trading this highly situational invulnerability to magic, which is basically going to make some challenges trivial for you, but not many, in exchange for being an easy target to all of the psionics and robots and supervillains and gun-wielding psychos that inhabit this world as well as evil wizards, because you're physically fragile and basically can't do anything about it. What does this have to do with enchanted objects? Why is this like the distinctive option that only magical belts and caps and rings can give you? What is the logic? What does imperviousness to magic have to do with physical fragility? I don't understand. I can understand making a specific NPC who has this condition, but it's weird as a normal character option. This whole category is fucked up. I don't get it. Like, starting at a high but static power level so that you start better than other characters, but then they gradually overtake you. But your abilities cost PPE to use, even if they're superpowers. So, like, you have to spend magical energy to fuel superpowers. And then you also get an unrelated special bonus that could be like you're hard to poison, or you're very beautiful, or you're impervious to magic, but your body stops growing. What are we doing? Anyway, what's clear is all your powers do come from your magical object, which I guess could be whatever. Without that object, you are powerless, and maybe worse than powerless if you've taken this impervious to magic option, because it means you lose all the powers of the object, but now you're stuck with like 20 SDC and 10 hit points that never increase, so you're like very easy prey. So you're always going to want to have this object with you and activated, right? Well, apparently the designers had a problem with that, because they tried to prevent you from doing that, and this is the dumbest thing on this page. It's perfectly obvious from the language here that in previous editions of the game, fans wondered, why wouldn't you have, for example, an enchanted Speedo that you just wear all the time? I know it sounds ridiculous to have a thing in a role-playing game where you have like magical underwear that gives you really fun superpowers and you just wear it all the time and have adventures. Obviously, that would be an absurd role-playing experience, but some people did ask the question. Given that you have a limited stock of PPE to reactivate these powers, why don't you just keep the object on you all the time and keep your powers active all the time, effectively negating this attempted balance thing with potential psychic energy? And so the game explains why you would turn off your powers instead of just leaving them on. Quote, one reason to turn them on and off is that the magically empowered character's eyes and enchanted object glow, destroying any hope of anonymity or disguise. This is the dumbest thing on this page, despite all of the mechanical problems, because what you've created here, let's be frank, is a hideous monster of a power category. Absolutely ripe for min-maxing. I mean, the ability to get a 7th level power at first level is crazy. I mean, I'm not even really like a devoted min-maxer of this system, but immediately when I see it, the light bulb goes on. Like, oh, it's time to go shopping for superpowers that are crazy overpowered at 7th level and get them at first level and ruin somebody's campaign. Like, you can't resist. Likewise, I mean, I've seen plenty of online discussion about this impervious to magic trait. You would never take it normally, but it's a great combination with, for example, the invulnerability superpower, so that you're immune to normal attacks and you're immune to magical attacks that can normally get through invulnerability. This power category is just made for people who want to abuse the system. And this is just one more example of that. Well, if the powers cost PPE to activate, why don't I pick one that I can just leave on all day and get around that cost? And the feeble, feeble answer of this directionless fucking power category is because it makes your eyes glow. What the fuck do I care? I'm invincible to everything, man. I got a magical Speedo that makes me impossible to kill by any means, magical or mundane. And I'm going to give that up because it makes my eyes glow? This is a line of weak-ass tacked-on rules text directed at power gamers who could not give one fuck less whether their eyes look weird while they're wrecking your campaign. It's a totally ineffective balancing factor for the powerhouses envisioned here. All it does is serve to screw players who want to do something more subtle. For example, if you want to be a character who has the love charm spell and uses magic to essentially charm person their way through situations, if you want to play a character who has powers of disguise or stealth or invisibility, this line of text ruins it because now your eyes and your magical underpants are glowing while you try to sneak past people or charm them or whatever. I mean, this one of the random powers this thing can give you is invisibility. I guess you just look like two glowing eyeballs floating down the hallway while you have that invisibility active. Unless the invisibility covers the glowing eyes, in which case it's pointless. It seems weird to pick on this one like flavor line, but it's one of those cases where if somebody had thought about this for a second, they would have realized this is a totally pointless fix that does not remotely fix the issue it's addressed at. But it's like, this is layer by layer by layer, everything that's wrong with Palladium design. You start with a core of bad rules that don't work. You layer on top of that a mistrust of and antagonism for the players that you feel like they got to be kept in line so they don't use your shitty rules to usurp the GM's precious authority. So you stack on top of that a badly written fix that obviously won't work and only serves to screw players who are trying to do something fun with the system. We're at peak Palladium, people. It's got to be the dumbest thing on this page. Anyway, enough of this magical trinkets bullshit. Join me tomorrow when we discuss some superheroes who learned magic the right way, the hard way, on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That's ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Art of Escapism, whose work you can find at soundcloud.com/artofescapism. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.